Today's episode is supported by Kronos. No one compliments you when their paycheck is late, but make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. Kronos makes sure that your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Learn more at kronos.com/payroll. That's KRONOS.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
The Around the NFL podcast is 25% vegetarian, but 100% meaty.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I am joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Ho!
And if you're not aware, Mark Sessler is the resident vegetarian.
That was an odd way to get into this show.
It was unusual. We have no control over the creative content. The first thing our listener hears is something we have no control over. And you have to wonder, I mean, this is our program, Greg. Maybe we need to take a little.
Well, we could take control. So I look at that as it is under our control. We've chosen to cede the floor.
You're making it sound like it was a decision we made rather than we just like, oh, that's one less thing that we have to worry
well,
about.
Well, let's get together for yet another brainstorming session, having to come up with 4,000. I'll let someone else do it. I don't care what they have to say about us.
Thank God, by the way.
Got feisty Mark today.
No, it's just like endless brainstorming. It's just like we don't need to come up with those things too. They're doing a fine job with them.
They are, and thank you to Money. Big late slate of games here on the Sunday of Week 9. Because I'm a professional and because I'm a Jets fan, I spent three and a half hours watching Jets-Dolphins in the early slate today, and I can honestly tell you it made me 14% less of a professional football fan. That, like, if you plugged me into Bridget and you got the data, ask Gruden for the correct pronunciation, it would say, Dan likes 14% less.
Forever?
It was permanently altered. And then the late games came over, and they were all great, and it got me back up.
Oh, okay.
It eliminated that 14% drop. It's like in Vegas, if you hit the blackjack table, you're down early, and then you clean up at 2 a.m., and you get back to even, but it feels like a win.
Well, and as a gift to you and our fans, that can be the last that we ever speak of that Jets-Dolphins game. Skip right past it.
Is there nothing to be gleaned on Game Pass from this game?
There's a gleam, gentlemen. No, not really. But I know you're a tape grinder, a tape monkey. What do they say, a tape monster? What is it?
These nicknames are getting worse by the
minute. Tape monkey's just fine.
You're a tape monkey. You'll be watching it, and you won't be enjoying what you're watching. But here's the good thing. We got better games to talk about, including the late game of the year, America's game, which lived up to the promise. Let's start right there.
Breeze drops back, throws down the slot. Mike Thomas is strong. He's to the 30. He's to the 20. To the 10. Touchdown. Mike Thomas, 72 yards. And the Saints strike a hole in the hearts of the Rams in the fourth.
He pulls out the prop. He goes to get the phone. He goes to get the Joe Horn, dials him up.
You got the cell phone.
Zach Strief, Deuce McAllister, who I believe was on that Saints team with Joe Horn.
Absolutely.
WWL with the call. Drew Brees threw it over Marcus Peters' head. Michael Thomas made the catch and took it from there. It was the seventh and final touchdown of the day, or the sixth and the final touchdown of the day for the Saints, who knocked off the Rams 45-35 at the Superdome. It's the first loss of the season for the Rams, who began the season 8-0. The Saints, meanwhile, have put themselves in the driver's seat for home field advantage in the NFC playoffs. Chris Wessling, that is a monster. That is a tape monster, a tape monkey of a win for Sean Payton and company.
Michael Thomas versus Marcus Peters is not a fair fight. When Peters got that calf injury in late September, they originally said he would be out for a month. He ended up not missing any time, but he has been toasted week in and week out, and I don't know if it's the calf. He says he's 100%. Michael Thomas abused him. There were a couple penalties in this game by Peters as well, and the Saints just have that trio of superstars with Kamara, Michael Thomas, and Breeze. And Breeze is making so many improbable plays where you count him out, you think he's going to be sacked, and he comes through with a huge play.
I mean, Michael Thomas is right there among the best receivers in the league. The fact that he's caught 71 of 79 passes thrown his way this year. And then and that really struck me when I watched him last week in last week's game. These are not easy completions. Like, he's catching balls down the field. He's catching balls in traffic. He is maybe the best right now at getting contested catches, him and DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, he and DeAndre Hopkins, I think, are fighting for the title of next Larry Fitzgerald.
This was a game where the Saints jump out big early, and you could feel it becoming a Rams game like all the others at one point, where the Rams were utterly unstoppable in the third quarter, held the Saints to, I think, 50 yards for much of the second half, and then New Orleans got aggressive again the way they were early, and I love the way they won this. They have a pretty rough schedule down the stretch, so we're going to find out if they have any shot to hang with the Rams as a final record, but this redirected the NFC because there's no way that I buy the Saints winning an NFC title game on the road. It has to be in their house. That's the way they've always been. But you're getting the best version of Drew Brees, I think, that we've ever seen right now.
This game started with four possessions and four touchdowns. So you knew right away, and you kind of felt this is what the game was going to be. But then when it played out to that script, you knew it was going to be exciting. And then the big turning point in the first half was after a Mark Ingram fumble, the Rams attempt a fake field goal and don't get it. And maybe they did. Johnny Hecker seemed to be right there with the reach, but they didn't. They ruled him short. Sean McVay challenged it, did not get the overturn. And then that led to a 21 points, straight points, for the Saints. They seem like they're in total control. And then the Rams, they get a late field goal, and they score, they score, they score, and all of a sudden it's 35-35. But then give credit, Greg, to the Saints, who then, with the game slipping away, were able to get those last 10 points, including the Thomas TD.
And part of that is because Alvin Kamara is, to me, the best short yardage back in football. And he might be the back, if I could just choose one, I think I would go with Kamara. And it's because he is so amazing in those condensed red zone situations where you normally think, okay, you want a pounder to run it up the middle. He can do that, but you can run him on the outside like you did to win the game on the final fourth down play where they gave it to him. You can obviously use him in the passing game, and they just exposed the Rams linebackers. I mean, nobody can cover Kamara in the passing game, but they definitely couldn't.
There were a couple great plays by Demario Davis, who was cast off by the Browns, traded to the Jets, left the Jets. He really made a difference in the run stopping, even though Gurley got his yards. But alongside Drew Brees, Jared Goff threw some incredible throws in this game. I mean, this was fun to watch because you're getting the height of quarterback play for a full game, full 60 minutes.
Goff throws a few jaw-dropping passes every week.
And the height of, like, play calling. I mean, these are the two best along with the Chiefs right now. It's just like, if you can't enjoy this, you know, go eat
it back.
Go eat it. And it does show those.
Go eat it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, ooh, we want the old defensive football, whatever. Enough. But it does show the limitations. Like, think of all the money that the Rams have spent on their defense. And it's like it was a prayer to try to stop New Orleans. They need Aqib Talib healthy, and they need Peters to play better.
We talked about it, too, when we on the Thursday pod, or the Wednesday show. The Rams' defense hadn't really taken a leap from where it was last year, and they invested a lot of money in it to happen. It was a tough spot tonight, but they certainly did not get it done today. So if you want to get a little nervous if you're a Rams fan, can my defense in a big spot step up? Because they didn't hear, and I thought I heard something there.
Oh, yeah.
Now it was at the appropriate sound and volume level this time. It was a lock, and it was mine.
Did you hear that, Erica?
I heard him loud and clear.
What do you think he was insinuating there?
Probably an error on your end for not noticing it.
No.
Yeah, it was completely ignored entirely by everyone the first time around.
It sounded like he was saying you didn't time it correctly and you didn't play it loud.
No, it was drowned out by a bunch of people talking.
Exactly. The timing and volume was impeccable.
Nice job, though.
I was nervous, though. I honestly was like,
serious mark
on top of
game.
Your own favorite team getting squashed for the 80th week in a row, to lose this lock was like, why did I lock up against the Rams? I am a raging idiot. I feel lucky to get out of it.
We're lucky, put it that way. Also, Michael Thomas, that's a franchise record, 211 yards in one game. Let's move on.
Stafford out of the shotgun.
I mean, we're really lucky.
Claustrophobic. He gets away from the rush of Danielle Hunter. Now he flips it to Kerryon Johnson. Yes, it is a fumble. And it's picked up by the Minnesota Vikings. And rolling into the end zone, it is Danielle Hunter for a 32-yard touchdown.
Oh, Paul Allen, Vikings Radio Network with the call. Danielle Hunter. I I love this one. Just love that horn. It's like a Vikings horn.
It's the best one.
3.5 sacks. One of 10 sacks for the Vikings, a franchise record. And he had that fourth quarter fumble return for a score. A dominant defensive performance for the Vikings. They beat the Lions 24-9. Greg, the Vikings also got a solid contribution from Dalvin Cook in what amounted to a get-right game following last week's loss.
It was. I'm surprised almost to see this second in the rundown just because it was a nothing burger of a game that you can just define by.
Now you're taking shots at me.
No, I'm just saying. The Lions.
It's not at West.
The Lions didn't
now
show
you
up.
Now you eat it.
The Lions didn't show up.
Whatever it is, you eat it.
Yeah, I didn't do the rundown of games here.
46 pass plays for the Lions in this game. They gained 3.1 yards per play on those. He was sacked 10 times, 17 quarterback hits. The front line of Hunter, and the key here to me is Everson Griffin just kind of coming back and completing that group. And other guys had a big day. Tom Johnson had a big day. Hunter, to me, is right there as a potential all-pro, and they just got it done. On a day where Kirk Cousins made two kind of sloppy turnovers, it didn't matter whatsoever. They had this game in hand.
If you'd really like to know, if you want to go
it all
behind,
works together, NFC.
What I like to do is pack the games together, and this is all top NFC contenders.
I think I see a theme sense there, and it's a good show running by you.
There is some talk that with the trade of Golden Tate, that quick passing game that Jim Bob Cooter's had the last few years with Matthew Stafford might be out the window in favor of more of a deep drop downfield passing game. Is that maybe a problem with these sacks?
I mean, it certainly didn't look good, and they loved pointing out on 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6 that they couldn't find anyone open. They tried to use Theo Riddick kind of in that role in the slot, and he wasn't finding any. He was holding the ball, but their offensive line was just dominated. Most of these sacks were not holding the ball variety to me. They were just like Danielle Hunter, especially, is a man amongst boys.
The Lions had a streak of 25 consecutive games with at least 14 points stopped here. And you just wonder, like all those other games, for the most part, Golden Tate's in the mix. That was a major piece of that offense to be taken out in the middle of a season at a trade deadline move. You wonder if that's going to take some time for them to fill that void. He was a sneaky, huge part of that offense.
Yeah, he was on pace for 100 catches and 1,200 yards. That's not a small part.
I think they're finding their level, though. This is a team that I've struggled to kind of figure out.
Ooh.
No one locked this game up.
Just a reminder that I locked up the Saints over the Rams. Thank you, Erica.
Well done, Mark.
This is a team. They're 3-5. Don't they just seem like a 6-10 team? I mean, they don't do.
Yes.
There's not much.
It's another Lions team that just you forget about instantly the second week 7 ends. And there's too many of those.
There's some concern if you're a Vikings fan. I think Adam Thielen is certainly not healthy right now. He had 22 yards, so there goes his 100-yard streak. He had 7 targets in this game. The offense in general is a little up and down. I mean, they had a million chances in this game to put it away. I think the Vikings ended up with 283 yards. They held the Lions to 209, so neither offense was really
I mean, no Stephon Diggs, a limited Adam Thielen.
Yeah.
But Cook, that's a big part of that offense, too. He had 89 yards on 10 carries. He's missed 5 of the last 6 games with that hamstring injury. You remember how good he was before he tore his ACL early last year.
That would be huge.
That would be a huge pickup for them.
They have the bye week to get healthy at wide receiver.
And I do like the emergence of Chad Beebe.
Beebe's
son. Don Beebe was in the crowd wearing Lions gear, watching his guy pick up a few third down conversions.
Made some plays. Nice job by you.
So RotoWorld this week called Dalvin Cook the NFL shrug emoji.
Huh.
Before this game, it was dismissive, essentially, but he was dismissive as an entity
before
this game. Well,
it's kind of like you don't know what you're going to get. And even in this game, he popped off a 70-yard run, which showed it was actually the fastest anyone has run this year, according to Next Gen Stats.
What else you need
but
to say?
But the other 9 carries, I think he had a total of 19 yards.
All right, but, you know, don't shrug emoji that 70-yarder, Greg.
Well, this was pre that.
I think it's more like we don't know what to make of this guy's fantasy situation rather than personal.
I think
personal
so, too. If you picked him up as a fantasy guy, you'd be slightly annoyed.
Plus. We got that. We got that straightened out. Let's move on.
I take it back. Good that was
the second down play with Newton in the backfield by himself. Newton throws end zone. Samuel jumps up, makes the catch. Middle of the end zone. Touchdown.
I call him the Mick. Mick Mixon, Panthers Radio Network. Cam Newton completed 19 of 25 passes, 247 and 2 touches, including that game-icing strike to Curtis Samuel. who's on the rise. A 42-28 win for the Panthers over the Buccaneers in Charlotte. That's 10 straight home wins for the Panthers. Look out. They're right in the mix for that top seed in the NFC 2, and you do not want to go to Charlotte for a lot of reasons. You don't want to go. Wes, the Bucs nearly dug themselves out of another big hole with Fitzmagic warming up, but in the end, Cam wasn't having any of it.
Panthers scored a franchise record 35 points in the first half, thanks in part to the Bucs' offense, which scored one touchdown but had only one total first down on the other five drives combined on the first six drives. And then Fitzpatrick started heating up, but James Bradberry in particular, cornerback from the Panthers, owned Mike Evans in this game, played him very tight, and passes to Mike Evans were not helping the Bucs in this game.
Wow, one catch on 10 targets.
Yes, Bradberry played him really tight.
Wow.
This was the game on Twitter where suddenly Norv Turner's name is bubbling up in a way that doesn't happen to Norv Turner very often in this century as a coach of the year, assistant coach of the year candidate, and the reason this is all happening for Cam Newton and the Panthers.
Well, they've got so many explosive weapons now that, you know, we've pointed out they used to draft power forwards, and now they have these run-after-catch monsters in DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel, who had a great double reverse touchdown.
Is that a tape monster?
Tape monster, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yak monsters.
That was one of those next-gen runs where Curtis Samuel, it was a 33-yard touchdown. He ran for like 103 plus yards.
In some of these drives, Cam Newton doesn't have to do that much. I mean, there's these reverses, there's these short throws, and as someone who's been, you know, kind of rooting, enjoying watching Cam play, this is a welcome change. And we in this room, we were saying we were just excited to get Shula out the door and get a nice professional-looking offense. And
you especially, you were.
I was, and I think Norv Turner is a good offensive coordinator. He's been solid wherever he's been.
I think McCaffrey might be quietly on pace for 2,000 yards from scrimmage.
Dang. He is a star.
The Bucs, by the way, like they this is Fitzpatrick. This is what you're going to get. I mean, as fun as.
That's
Magic
great.
Has been is he's he put them in a hole against Pittsburgh. He does it here. It's not his fault. He's playing at a fine level. They have weapons, but when you have the worst defense in the league and no running game, it's like you have a small margin for error, and you can't expect.
They're still averaging their defense allowing 40 points a game on the road. That is unbelievable.
Right.
That gets people fired.
It's like they got Mike Smith fired, so now they get killed playing man defense, man to man instead of zone.
I love this Panthers team. I think they're as good as anybody in the NFC, including the two teams we talked about at the top of the show.
Really?
Yeah. I think they could be – I think any of those teams, I wouldn't be surprised if they came out of the NFC. And I think it's because Christian McCaffrey's taking the next step. It's because Cam Newton – by the way, Wes, 76% of his passes completed. This guy is a different passer with Norv. And the other guy, Greg Olsen. You didn't know what you're going to get out of him. He's come back, and he looks like Greg Olsen.
He had a brilliant one-handed touchdown catch in this game.
And they're one of the best home teams in football.
They play the Saints twice down the stretch. The Saints owned them last year, beat them three times.
They did a nice job with that scheduling. It's twice over the last three games.
Yes.
That has – I was talking to Dave Ely downstairs.
I don't like that.
He's a hard luck guy,
Too
Dave Ely.
Close together.
I know you don't like that, but I like it in this division.
Ely, it is a good
What's going on with Ely?
No, he's a hard luck guy. You know, Dave, sometimes there's a bit of a Charlie Brown element to him with some of the things that happens in his personal life. But he is looking really in a good position with his favorite team, the Panthers. And that is shaping up.
He's just going to pull the ball away in the
He's been
the
here
playoffs.
Before. Yeah. I wouldn't get too
What I'm saying is
passive-aggressive shots fired.
I love Dave, even if you stole some of my tweets today, some plagiarism issues
going on. This is where this is coming from.
But,
this is where this is coming
Look at the schedule, week 15, week 17. Look at where these teams are packed up right now in the NFC. That could be an all-timer for Sunday Night Football last game of the regular season. Woo! And maybe Dave will kick the ball at last.
Maybe.
Don't bank on it.
Let's move on.
Slot to the right. Throws the screen. And ducking the man. And getting to the goal line. Touchdown, Antonio Brown. He just got rid of that tackler with a little shake and bake. And finally, it was him into the end zone.
Oh, he put a move on Tavon Young. Tavon Young got up and said, I lost a piece of my uniform. Can you please find it for me, Mr. Official?
All right. Bill Hillgrove, I think that could have been either Tunch Ilkin or Craig Wolfley of the Steelers Radio Network. Ben Roethlisberger threw two touchdown passes. He also ran for a score. And James Conner continued to do his thing. The Pittsburgh defense continued to look revitalized. A 23-16 win over the fading Ravens in Baltimore. Ouch. The Steelers have won four straight since the Ravens beat them in Pittsburgh back in week four. Greg, the Steelers delivered a damaging blow to their longtime rival today.
They did it. It was such a reverse of the first game that they have. This time, Pittsburgh has the time of possession advantage. Pittsburgh looks like the tougher team. And once again, a team that's ranked number one in defense provided very little resistance against Pittsburgh. The reason Roethlisberger and the Steelers were 10 of 16 on third down, and it just felt like the entire game was third and six, throw over the middle, third and seven, completion over the middle. It's because Roethlisberger wasn't bothered. He any time he got touched was of his own doing because he was just extending the play.
Almost. We'll get to that one play a little
right,
later.
Right, but for the most, even that was of his own. Like,
well, that's true.
Any time he got hit, it's because the play took forever for someone to get open. The Ravens were dominated up front.
And these are plays that Joe Flacco is not making and has not made in a couple weeks. And the Ravens, to me, feel like a team that needs to essentially almost reorganize at this point.
I have a conspiracy theory. Watching this game in the first quarter, you know, there is a lot of talk about Lamar Jackson and Joe Flacco and how Joe's feeling about this situation and how comfortable he is. And if initially it was seen as that's motivating him, but now as the season wears on and Lamar Jackson is getting more touches in third down situations and in late game situations, what's the deal? First and goal, Lamar Jackson is involved in a running play. Third and goal, so that's second and goal. Third and goal, Lamar Jackson goes in motion, wide open in the flat, all by himself, book it, 6 points. And Joe Flacco never looks at Lamar Jackson, throws into double coverage and sails it out of the back of the end zone. Now, I'm not saying nothing, Wes. I'm just saying I don't think he likes Lamar Jackson on the field, and he is not. He's going out of his way to make sure the man's not involved with this offense.
I am not subscribing to that or any other conspiracy theory, but
buy in, baby. It's not too early.
But I am going to eat crow for continuing to say this Ravens team is good, and they're now 4-5. Ian Rappaport is reporting that John Harbaugh is in trouble. The Ravens are heading into their bye week, and it sounds like their owner is going to look over this situation.
Wow. It would seem crazy to do it during the season, and I don't think they're that far away. They were certainly the inferior team, but it was really just like red zone. When the Steelers are in the red zone, they have James Conner, first of all, who is breaking tackles, went over 160 yards from scrimmage, is they set up a nice touchdown for him as a receiver, whereas the Ravens, Flacco just missed a few throws, including that one, but another one to Crabtree. They're using Lamar Jackson a ton, and then there's no rhythm there. And then you look at what they did to their receivers. They threw 10 passes, or rather 13 passes to Crabtree and John Brown for less than 50 yards. It's just not an explosive offense. Flacco's fine, but this is the worst two-game stretch of his career.
They're the team that's built like a team. The NFL's moved on, and the Ravens are, you know, it takes a while to build that kind of an offense, but you've been beaten by the Saints and by the Panthers in the last 3 weeks. You just got taken out by Pittsburgh. It's hard to take you seriously.
They're done in the AFC North. They're now 1-3 in the division. They're 3 losses behind. The Steelers don't even have to play another game in the division until week 17. And I do think Wes's boy, Mike Hilton, I don't know, he might be like the key to the whole thing. Him and Joe Hayden getting healthy. When Mike Hilton came back, this defense just looked a lot better, and he made a number of plays today.
I think the Ravens have to go 6-1 down the stretch. That would put them at 10-6.
Steelers,
they're not going to do that.
I feel like Steelers, to me, are right there with the Chiefs and the Patriots.
You want to hear real talk, Greg?
Yeah.
I feel like you're taking it easy on Joe Flacco right now.
I think he's just like, what do you expect? I would say on balance, this season has been a Joe Flacco season, a better than the last two seasons, right in line with most of his career.
But that's why they drafted a quarterback in the first round, because it's not good enough. It's not being good enough for half a
decade. Better this year and maybe
be
better.
He was until the last 2 weeks, and he hasn't had a 2 week stretch. But he's just blah. He's blah.
Yeah. The Roethlisberger hit he took was brutal. Mm. Greg, you're not always great with your injury predictions when it happens in real time.
I like
down
to
the
make
newsroom.
Bold injury predictions that have no repercussions.
They're usually season-ending injury predictions.
downstairs in the newsroom. Not on air. You're bringing this up.
Typically, we lack the context because Greg's watching the game. Maybe we're not watching it. So it just is like, oh, bummer. Like, I remember Evan Engram tore his ACL earlier this season. There have been several things. This time, we were told, oh, Big Ben, probably broke his clavicle.
Not even probably.
He broke his clavicle.
He broke his collarbone. He's done.
I didn't say probably.
It was a vicious hit, though.
I said, watch out. Looks like a broken collarbone.
He made a major play like 80 seconds later.
Yeah.
That kills any other quarterback. Roethlisberger is a freaking tank.
Looks like it's going to be Josh Dobbs the rest of the season.
I think the key with, like, talking about devastating season injury,
it's not to.
Injuries. It's to get ahead of the story. Make sure you're first to let the newsroom know.
And shout out to Josh Dobbs, who got them out of deep in their own territory with a 25-yard throw.
There's a huge play in the
game. That was a big play in the game. So, Dobbsy, nice job. You know who wouldn't have done that? The other guy. What was his name? Landry?
Landry Jones.
Forget about that guy already. Did he ever make a play in 4 years there? Dobbsy's the future.
Well, all right.
Let's move on.
Yeah. 51-yard attempt for the win. The snap is down. The kick is up.
Wide right. It's no good. It's wide right. The Texans win it. 19-17. Houston prevails. The Texans have won their sixth straight game.
Yeah, they did. Mark Vandermeer, Andre Ware, John Harris in that booth celebrating two Texans radio network. Brendan McManus's 51-yard field goal attempt went wide right as time expired, allowing Houston to escape Denver with a 19-17 win over the Broncos. Broncos, yes, that's six straight wins for the Texans. And for the Broncos, it's a crusher. I mean, the team that was once 2-0 is now 3-6. Their playoff hopes severely damaged by this one. If they go 6-1, that might not even be enough. Fall to 3-6. That's too many losses this early, so they're in deep trouble. I do want to, just to get Greg, you fired up a little bit, talk about the McManus attempt at the end, because Case Keenum, Case is Case, and he was up and down in this game, but he completed on a fourth down near midfield, I'd say about around Denver's 40-yard line, and fourth down with the pass rush closing in and about a minute to play, he hangs tough in the pocket. He delivers a strike over the middle, first down on the other 40, and Denver now is set up to win this game, down two. And what happens? Vance Joseph, who is running out of time, and maybe when you hear this, he'll be out of time. We don't know. It's getting to that point. Settles and gets very conservative in a very windy day, even though the wind had died down for this kick. He settles on essentially a 50-yard field goal for the win, and McManus pushed it, and that's it. And then Bill O'Brien on the other side, and this is one of the great subplots of Week 9, and let's be honest, maybe the season, maybe the history of football. They catch O'Brien on the sideline.
We think, yeah.
We think, allegedly, but if you could read lips, you can get the gist. What is he saying as he goes to meet Joseph at midfield for the handshake?
It's not like he's right near Joseph.
He's leaving his sideline.
Yeah, it appears Bill O'Brien says, "Good job, Vance, you dumb f-."
Censored.
Whoa. Oh, man, that's brutal.
Aggressive.
But the reason he's saying is it did not take a gifted tactician to know you don't settle for a 50-yard field goal, and that's what the Broncos did, and it might have cost them their season.
Coaches have been doing this probably since, the last 50 years or so. Are we going to start seeing, more aggressive situational football in field goal situations?
It's insane. It's like human – there's been so much progress in human evolution and football tactics. It's like we still can't overcome this, that men that are getting paid, millions of dollars a year haven't figured this one out.
Another reason not to hire another defensive-minded coach is your lead guy. I mean, they enter their bye week, Denver.
Well, the OC.
Does he escape?
OC there? Because he deserves to
Bill
be
Musgrave.
There. I don't even know.
Bill Musgrave isn't exactly like the freshest. I'm sure he's a very good coach, but he's been around for a while. He may subscribe to these old way thinking.
But the
habits.
Buck stops with the head coach.
Right.
So that's
and maybe
why
they're
O'Brien
afraid of Case
that.
Keenum like doing something loose, but I don't care. And McManus had missed a kick earlier. He missed a kick, I believe, last week. It's like
he's one of the more reliable kickers though, too. That's
why make it harder though? It's this philosophy that it's like, oh well, it's the kicker's fault, not my fault. Give me a break.
And the tech, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Zeuser's hot. Wes, Zeuser's hot. That's five straight.
I gotta get Packers better win this game.
And I got lucky, just like the Texans got lucky here, because Denver, like I said, was well set up to steal this game, and they couldn't get it done. And you look at the
Texans are the luckiest team in the league right now.
Yes.
If you look at the Colts game, the Cowboys game, even the Bills game, and then this game, just the fact to win all four of them.
I don't disagree with you, but what I'll say is this. I think this is a team that's getting better as the season goes along, and having those lucky wins, they're not going to give them back. They're not going to say sorry for it.
Yep.
I think this team is going to start peaking. I was a little disappointed that they didn't close this game out. like I thought they would, because they weren't able to get to Keenum, and they kind of needed Joseph and McManus to bail them out. But a win is a win, and when you could basically eliminate a team from the playoff picture while you're at it, all the better.
And to your – Dan, if you're in the side that you think they're going to surge, they have the Titans, Browns, and Jets over the next – when they come out of their bye. After
the AFC couple other games schedules too, in general are great. And DeAndre Hopkins just putting this team on his back, 10 catches, 105 yards on 12 attempts. When you really don't have any receiving options and he's the one and he does it week after week.
Demaryius Thomas in his debut, 3 for 60, had a 30-yarder early in the game. So he wasn't a huge part of the game, but he was a contributor. And you imagine they're going to give him more reps as things go on.
Broncos also lost their best offensive lineman, Matt Paradise, to a 6 to 8 week injury, a broken leg.
So I don't think he's missed the game in his career.
Paradise lost, I think you mean.
Ooh, nice.
Whoa. Let's move on.
Hunt, halfback, right. Mahomes will throw. Retreating, steps up, fires it for the end zone. Kelce, great catch, touchdown! Kansas City, second of the day for Cleveland Heights High School and Travis Kelce.
Mitch Holtis, of course, Chiefs Radio Network. MVP frontrunner Patrick Mahomes passed for 375, three touchdowns, two to Travis Kelce from wherever he's from. As the Chiefs rolled to a 37-21 win over the Browns, this is the first game for Cleveland without Hugh Jackson, so Greg Williams as interim is 0-1. Mahomes has 29 TD passes and 3,185 yards, the most by any quarterback through 10 games since 1950. And he's passed for at least 300 yards in 8 straight games. Mark, we are all witnesses.
More of the same for Kansas City. I mean, this game felt very cooked for Cleveland when Greg Williams decided to deactivate Demaryius Randall, who is dealing with some injury stuff. But then Denzel Ward went out with a hip injury. Then E.J. Gaines was soon lost with a concussion. They had a bunch of jabronis flying around the secondary, and Kansas City just ate them up. When you watch this game, what they did with open spaces in the flats and the way they used their screen game to absolutely devastate Cleveland's defense, it put them, like with so many other teams that play the Chiefs, right away on their heels trying to catch up. And Cleveland initially countered with this very bizarre strategy. Well, I mean, I guess if you could have done it all game long, it would have worked, but this seven-plus-minute drive where all they did was run the ball to keep the ball out of Kansas City's hands. But then, you know, right after that possession where Cleveland scored a touchdown, the Chiefs come back and score in like 3 seconds or up 21-9.
Right, it doesn't really matter.
You can't
matter
do this against Kansas
stop.
City. Right.
Yeah, you can play all the ball control you want. The greatest ball control game of all time is Super Bowl 25, the Bills and Giants. But the Giants got stops on top of, having the ball for 40 minutes in that game.
What did you think of Freddie Kitchens in his play calling debut?
Outside of the early attempt to just run the ball like you're playing, you know, essentially Madden against someone and take out the entire first and second quarter, more quick passes. I thought it was probably Baker Mayfield's best game in a while. He threw a late bad pick in garbage time, but really this was not on Mayfield. It was on the defense. I thought that the offense looked as organized as it has in a while, and how could it look much worse than it's looked for large chunks of games?
And the Browns defense, which had made a lot of plays in the first month, has really not done much in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, not that you'd expect them to against the Chiefs. It strikes me, looking at the box score, 6 different players had plays of over 20 yards for the Chiefs. I mean, that's just like, what are you going to do?
They had at one point in the first half a 50, 40, 25, 25, 23, 21, and 19-yard gain. I mean, it looked worse than that.
The half glass full, half glass empty with the Browns. Half glass full, I would love to have my rookie quarterback, the production. The Mayfield is competitive, and he makes plays, he makes mistakes, but he looks like a guy that's, you know, learning on the job and progressing. The half glass empty is Browns have 2 wins in their first 9 games, and this was supposed to be a little different this year, and it's just kind of more of the same.
It's more of the same, but it's also completely different because every other year this would systematically happen to Cleveland. It's Brandon Whedon or Austin Davis or Johnny Manziel just left the team and is facing, you know, charges and arrests and drug issues. So it is different, just the same with your Jets, to have a quarterback that they're basically like, we got rid of everyone because we're going to get the right people to put around our quarterback. That is different.
It is weird, though, that week when I probably was the one who said this was like, any one of these 4 teams could win the AFC North. You can make a case. It's like
just fast forward a month.
That was a long time ago.
Let's move up.
This is the game from the 6. Wilson, shotgun snap, passing down, pocket collapses. Wilson steps up, throws to the end zone, incomplete. Chargers win. And the Bolts have won their fifth straight game and improved to 6-2.
Come on, DJ, get on the mic.
Was he not?
That was money, right? That was all money.
He came in.
Sounded like there
end
might have been an edit in there. Who knows?
That was thought me. He came in at the.
You edited DJ
I
out.
Edited out DJ. Money and DJ KFI with the call down 8, with one untimed down left. Russell Wilson bought time, found it open. David Moore in the back of the end zone. Moore couldn't make the catch, though. Maybe got tipped, deflected, but it was enough to lead to the incompletion. The Chargers escape with the win, 25-19. What was it, 26-19?
25-17.
25-17. At the clink, Greg, kicking issues again plagued the Chargers, but they managed to avoid the collapse just barely.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about Caleb Sturgis missing extra points and field goals.
10 kicks in 6 games.
Not only that,
pulling
off the rare daily double of missing an extra point that would have ended the game and then getting a penalty for tripping on the ensuing kickoff that was not a very good kickoff.
Where's Kai Forbev?
Was he trying to break his own leg?
Right.
Where is Kai?
I want to focus more on the first 55 minutes of the game where two things stuck out. Russell Wilson is a far inferior quarterback right now to Phillip Rivers.
Wow.
At least in terms of the two passing – let's say the two passing games as a whole. And then one of the two teams is more aggressive because of that passing game. Rivers is so good at avoiding sacks, not taking negative plays. The three sacks that Russell Wilson took in this game, especially early, were all on him. He put his team in tough situations. He threw that pick six, but before that even, I really had him as having a very negative day, whereas Phillip Rivers made some insane back shoulder throws. They're really counting on the big plays. It's a little like an uneven offense that just counts on the big plays, but they're hitting them every week.
This is the best Phillip Rivers that we've ever had, I think.
I would not go that far. To me, he's
well. We're far away from. Remember the year where it was like they were so worried about him that he was such a disaster.
What he looks like with good pass protection for the most part. His right tackle is getting him killed, but other than that, they have a good pass protection. And there was one kind of sequence early in the game that struck me. There was a Seahawks had 3rd and 18. They run the ball and punt it because that's just like what the Seahawks do. The Chargers had 3rd and 15. From their own 11, two plays later, they have a touchdown. 54 yards to Allen, 34 yards Melvin Gordon, who's running like crazy. And they just have enough playmakers. You mentioned closers on the Texans. Like the Chargers are kind of like that, at least on offense, that anyone can pop off for 40 yards.
They have the Raiders, Broncos, and Cardinals after this. That's how you get
Chargers
to 9-2 and then face the Steelers.
They won 5 in a row here.
Keenan Allen, who's been quiet this year, he had a nice game. And Austin Eckler, who we know is the PFF darling. He was nominated. He didn't win last week. Who took home the PFF darling of the year? Big victory. Everybody
I gave knows. It to Trey Flowers.
You gave it to Trey Flowers, of course.
Of course.
But Keenan Allen, yep, Melvin Gordon, Phillip Rivers, that is a troika.
It has to be on your radar, Dan, as like the guy who's got the kicking beat covered, that the Chargers always pick the wrong kicker.
They're cursed.
Sturgis missed 2 games, and his replacement, Michael Badgley, made all 10 of his kicks. So they send him to the practice squad, put Caleb Sturgis on the field. He misses 3 kicks. He's been missing kicks all year.
Yeah, this game.
There's one solution.
Cut Caleb Sturgis.
And sign?
Aguayo?
Kai Forbath.
Oh, how dare
get
you.
Get Kai in the building.
The Seahawks lost Chris Carson in this game to an injury, which could be a very big injury for them because Mike Davis not as good, and they refused to play their first-round pick, Rashad Penny.
They probably should.
They did. A few carries.
Refused.
Not good.
Let's hear from our sponsor. Indochino is North America's leading made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Just visit a showroom and have a stylist take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. And then what do? You let the compliments roll in. You guys are in your Indochino.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Why would I not?
You're quite enjoying it, aren't you?
Give me some Indochino.
Has that led to an uptick in with your love lives, with your wives and fiance?
I don't know. You like to triple source stuff. I mean, go find the other sources involved here and see what they have to say.
Okay. We'll go to those sources.
How are there more than one source?
I get all depends what's going on with each with Love Life. But anyway, since November is Black Friday season, you can take advantage of 2018's lowest prices, get up to 70% off everything, and look great while you take center stage for your biggest moments. Go to Indochino.com and use the code AROUND at checkout to take advantage of Black Friday pricing. That's 70% off the regular price for a made-to-measure suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code AROUND for up to 70% off. It's an incredible deal for a made-to-measure suit. Once you go custom, you don't go rack. That's good. Let's move on. That's really
Ryan fakes the toss, flips it on the screen. Here's Julio. Jones is open.
Really enjoyed that.
Down the far sideline, and we'll score. Oh, my heavens.
There you go, Atlanta. Julio's in the end zone. Stop the clocks. The counts.
It was a big deal, this Julio Jones scoreless streak, but now it's over. Wes Durham, Dave Archer, John Michaels, Falcons Radio Network. Julio Jones, welcome back to the end zone. The All-Pro wideout ended his 12-game touchdown drought. One of four touchdown throws from Matt Ryan in the Falcons' 38-14 win over the Redskins. That's three straight wins for Atlanta. Chris Wessling, the Skins weren't at the Falcons' level in this one. Why not?
This was the most impressive Falcons game of the year, and really – they really shoved it in my face after I said that I almost locked the Redskins, and I wasn't fearful of the Falcons because of their defense. And the Redskins want to control the trenches, and they want to jump ahead early and play ball control. The Falcons won up front on both sides of the ball in this game. I thought the Redskins would push them around, and it went the other way. Part of that was because the Redskins played without left tackle Trent Williams, then lost two offensive linemen on the first two series, then lost Brandon Scherff later in the game. So they didn't really have much of a chance there. Adrian Peterson was getting blown up in the backfield over and over again, and this was a complete win. I think we can bury any of the concerns about Steve Sarkisian. The Falcons are one of the best third and long offenses in the league. They kept converting over and over again on third and long in this game. They're one of the best red zone offenses in the league. I believe they've scored touchdowns on 17 of their last 20 trips to the red zone. This team is kind of rolling, and you know, Greg's been saying don't bury them, don't bury their playoff chances. They're still, you know, pushing a rock uphill with that schedule in the second half, but they're not over yet.
I mean, there is a huge difference. The 18 games last year, the season opener against Philly, there was just major issues with that offense, and everything has melted away every week. The numbers, the yardage, the touchdown passes, it just piling up.
It's a top five or six offense, and that's why I've said the whole time, let's not give up on them, because if you have a top five or six offense, you're going to have a chance. And the thing that I'd like to hear from you, Wes, about was just the running game, 148 yards from the two running backs today. That, as someone who's kind of rooting for the Falcons, that makes me feel good, because that's the part that hasn't really been there for them.
Yeah, Tevin Coleman had some chunk plays in this game. He had a good game. But like I said, the Falcons controlled the trenches up front, and they're doing it with both guards out for the season. They looked well-coached in this game, really well.
Coming off a bye week.
10 of 13 on third downs. You just need to get Matt Ryan to year two with these coordinators.
Jay Gruden at halftime said our third down defense is a joke, and it was.
But part of that is Matt Ryan. Like, one of the things watching them is I would want a handful of other quarterbacks before Matt Ryan. But, like, Matt Ryan on third and four – I don't know. Matt Ryan on third and six, like he
throws
like
it to the right guy.
Right. You totally trust him. I don't know. There's not many better than him in that position.
Falcons still have a lot of work to do to dig out from this, because you get in this NFC, you get off to this start where the Redskins can win this division. They're NFC East still, but they're one of a few teams that you remind you every year you get these playoff teams that you realize, oh, I don't believe in this team at all. In the terms of their ultimate fate at all.
Well, the Redskins can't come from behind. They don't have the firepower to do it. And they got behind 28-7 in this game, so that was never going to be a recipe for them to come back.
Mark, the Falcons are a Super Bowl pick, so we're okay.
We're climbing back into this thing.
Everything's okay.
They get Deion Jones is eligible to come back in 2 weeks, their best defensive player.
See what's happening here?
Keep an eye on Maurice Harris, who is a big part of that Washington offense here. 10 receptions on 12 targets for $124. And Adrian Peterson is having kind of a weird statistical season, where he either has a really big game, like a vintage game, or it's these type of games where it's like 9-for-17.
Yeah, he doesn't play when they get down.
It doesn't help that like half their offensive line exited the field.
Right.
That's the thing. Like when they've lost, I'm thinking the Saints game,
The Colts game?
The Colts game and then this one. It's like they look so bad when they lose. Yes. That it just makes me think ultimately you're kind of a middle-of-the-road team and the Eagles have to be home watching this one thinking, come to mama.
The Eagles can just get their act together.
I don't know if a mom would treat her child that way.
Saying,
I don't know what.
Come
what,
to mama.
Okay. But if it were a mother-child relationship, there'd be more. That's this sounds wrong and vicious.
This offense has a chance to get really healthy next week. They play the Bucks.
That's good. All right, let's move on.
Third down and three for Peterman. He's got a back to his left, three receivers to the right. He takes the
snap.
Something bad's going to
happen.
Side, again. And intercepted out of the deflection. Leonard Floyd fired. End zone. Touchdown, Bears. Number two today.
Jeff Joniak, WBBM, with the call. The Chicago Bears intercepted three Nathan Peterman passes, including that Leonard Floyd pick six. The team of ATL became the latest team to steamroll the Bills. Final score 41-9 in Orchard Park. Not home. Those poor people. Mark, the Bills have reached quasi-bye status for teams fortunate enough to have them on the schedule.
I mean, especially when Nathan Peterman is listed as the starter and you're a defensive player on the other team, you dial up everyone you've ever met, every ex-girlfriend, every family member, and say, turn this on because I'm going to score some points. I mean, they
the mystery people in our love lives that you have to get for the triple source.
Right.
Dial them up.
Call
them
all. I mean, if you knew that Mitch Trubisky was going to throw for 135 yards and throw a pick, no one was going to run for more than 47 for Chicago, no one's going to count for more than 50 yards through the air, you'd think Buffalo would have a shot. The final score is 41-9 because of two pick sixes and endless turnovers. I mean, Buffalo is unwatchable, and I feel bad for Bills fans. They cannot get out of their own way on offense. And it does not help that every week we have a different terrible quarterback starting. There's no chemistry, no flow with anyone in that attack.
In games started by quarterbacks other than Josh Allen, the Bills have one touchdown on offense, and their offense is allowed four touchdowns.
Well, they're historically bad, and we know this.
They're negative. They're negative. They should just punt on first down. They would be doing better.
And they clearly – the Bears listened to this podcast because they sat Khalil Mack again, and they forced four takeaways.
That's why they did it.
That absolutely what happened because they almost played him last week. Like, whoa. The old Seuss is making sense over here. Four takeaways, 264 yards on offense. That's what all these teams got to do. Rest anybody you're worried about because the Bills just do not have the ability to score points, and I cannot believe they have two wins. I got to say.
It is crazy because you look at the – I was thinking, well, if nothing else, this is going to be a good test for Mitchell Trubisky on the road against a tough defense. Let's see some progress from the offense. And yet, I don't think you can really bang them for only getting 11 first downs and 190 yards. When you win 41-9, it's like, what's the difference? But it jumps off the page that the offense didn't need to move the ball at all.
This is a good defense, though.
Right?
You can't get their offense. Can't.
I mean,
100,
I would love to have the research to check, like, how many teams have gained under 200 yards and won a game by more than 30 points.
Hmm. People are worried that we've lost that loving feeling for the team of ATL. This is a playoff team. I believe in the Bears.
I'd like to see
by people, you mean like me and Dan and...
Yeah, basically most of this room.
Vast majority of pod listeners seem to think that we're not as excited about this team.
You know what
ATL
they need to
others.
Do? They have a couple high impact losses or high profile losses this season. I want to see a dramatic win where they really kind of show you.
That's fair.
What their ceiling is. But in the meantime, they're 5-3, and that's a good place to be.
They've already won almost six wins is the most wins they've had since 2013. So you're one away from that already.
And poor Bills fans. They're having a great time. They're throwing themselves through tables. They're eating bratwurst in the parking lot. It's 0-0 after the first quarter. Like, oh, maybe we could steal this game. Halftime, 28-0.
The Bears' next four games, they have the reeling Lions twice and the Giants once.
That's good.
Then the Rams. Well, bye-bye. Yeah,
that's looming.
Let's move on.
Darnold, bad snap, and he handles it. Gets it down, throws it out. It's intercepted by Jerome Baker down the sideline. He's got speed. Touchdown.
All right.
Miami.
Jerome Baker with the pick six.
Oh,
calm down. Timing for that one.
Jimmy Cephalo and the rest of the Dolphins radio network having a gay old time. Rookie linebacker Jerome Baker picked off Sam Darnold, took it to the house. The game-settling score, Dolphins 13-6 win over the regressing New York Jets. the dreaded Fish sweep their division foes. And somehow, almost impossibly, they'll reach the second week of November above 500 and in the thick of the AFC wildcard race. And if you're a Dolphins fan, you're already getting fired up and you're sending off critical tweets at the old Zeuser. Well, maybe you didn't watch the game because the Jets are a total travesty right now. And you still, you know, won by 7 points in a game where you scored 13. So it's, I think the Dolphins are very fortunate to have the record they have right now. And they were also that a defense that was under siege in the last 2 weeks. They had a good get healthy opponent because the Jets are completely lost on offense. They actually got back Robbie Anderson and Quincy Enunwa in the lineup from injuries, but the offense has now gotten to the point, and it's regressed to the point, and Sam Darnold has regressed and really hit a rookie wall here where it doesn't matter because there's just there's an issue. There's something broken here now with the Jets on offense, and they are a pitiful watch, and I just don't know what to make. You know what? Keith, you tell us about it.
His name is Keith. He's Dan's dad. No doubt about it, he's a big Jets fan. What is he gonna say about the game today? What is he gonna say about the game today?
Darnold really should have thrown about 7 interceptions today, just that the Dolphins dropped the others. The offensive coordinator, Bates, I don't know where his mind is at. The play calling that he has and the fact that the head coach was sleeping on the sidelines once again when their center couldn't, in the shotgun position, could not give a decent snap to Darnold all day. Even after he threw it over his head, it still he did not pull the guy. And, yeah, I agree the guy had an injured finger, dislocated finger, and I feel bad for that. But if the guy can't perform, you got to pull him. Disgraceful performance by the Jet offense today. And no adjustments at halftime offensively. Terrible.
Yeah, there it is. Spencer Long is the Jets center. It's been a subplot around for Jets fans that this guy has been terrible snaps. He has an injured finger, and it got to the point where he had to be benched in this game. So that's not helping. But Darnold's taken a big step back. They have 33 points scored in their last three games, all losses. They had 0 plays in the red zone today and against the Dolphins' defense. Again, guys, remember the last time we saw the Dolphins' defense against the Texans? They were the disgrace. So that tells you how far off this team is right now. If somebody else wants to get excited about the Dolphins, please do. I don't know when Ryan Tannehill's coming back. Brock Osweiler, again, is just he's got some W's for them. But
on a day the Dolphins should be feeling good, both tackles got injured. And after the game, one of their nucleus players on defense, Rashad Jones, it came out that he pulled himself from the game, basically benched himself. And some Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald had one source that basically said, if he doesn't want to play, F it.
That's why I feel for Dolphins fans, because this team for so long, even when they get wins, it's so rarely inspiring. There's so rarely long-term hope. Here's a game you won to go to 5-4. You have that anonymous source. You also have offensive players privately sharing their frustrations with Brock Osweiler on offense. They had 7 first downs. I mean, they won a game with 7 first downs. Wow. And 168 total yards, and basically it was just the Dolphins' defense essentially scored enough to win the game. And so even when you're winning the game, it's just like, well, what?
Osweiler made the Jets' pass rush look good, which tells you something. So he is no good. Rashad Jones, by the way, is a guy that's been around for a while there. He's been their starting safety since 2011. He is a core guy on that defense.
Been a great player at times.
So for him, yeah, he's one of their best defensive players. For him to pull himself out of the lineup. And Gase was said after the game, I don't know what about, I have to find out about it. I think Gase is in deep, deep trouble, regardless of how the season plays
out. It shouldn't
be
happening to 5-4 teams.
4-1 at home. You know, you don't go into Miami and get a win this year.
Well, it's not going to be 100 degrees with 100% humidity all year there.
Dan, one quick thing. Yes. Do you view this as like a Mitch Trubisky stuck in a John Fox last year Chicago Bears type
That's
thing?
Exactly how I see it, Mark Sessler. I think that it was kind of what I was worried could happen this year is I think it's Todd Bowles. I don't think gets fired tomorrow, but I don't think Todd Bowles are getting to the point where it's almost definite he's done. And the offense coordinator is not part of the future. This is not Jim Bob Cooter sticking around when the new coach gets hired. So it's just a matter of don't get hurt. And hopefully his confidence doesn't get shot here. I'm officially worried about Darnold's rookie season. Before we get to Sunday Night Football, guys are terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, a bad back, something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable, quote, rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor.
Well, okay.
Mark, you are not a man that goes to the doctor a lot.
No, but apparently I should have, considering some of the things that have occurred to me.
Well, the same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. What?
I mean, not for this reason I wouldn't go, but kudos to you if you fit into this category.
Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians. I knew I was saying it wrong. Can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door, and you can do it all online, and that's good. It's a private thing. Get Roman.com/around for a free visit online. For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/around. That's GetRoman.com/around for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/around. Which takes us to Sunday Night Football.
Wide open. Well, there were two guys who were there, but it's Josh Gordon, the second guy, in for the touchdown.
Oh, that Tom Brady's a sneaky little devil.
Oh, he is. Chris Collinsworth there, and also Al Michaels, of course, with the call. Sunday Night Football ends with a 31-17 win for the New England Patriots, who score 14 unanswered points in the final period to improve to 7-2, a damaging loss for the Green Bay Packers, who fall to 3-4-1. A game, Greg, and we're going to start with you because you're a very happy man tonight. A game that turned on the first play of the first quarter, the fourth quarter. It is 17-all. The Packers are driving. Aaron Jones gets the ball, coughs it up. The Packers unable to recover. The Pats pick it up. And from there, it was all New England.
Larry Guy making a play. Trey Flowers making plays. Adrian Claiborne making a play.
They call him Jag, just the guy.
He's been great. If you had told me, you know, when the Packers tied it up 17-all, it's what, midway through the second quarter, that they wouldn't score another point the other night, the rest of the night, I would have been stunned. And this win, to me, is the most meaningful of the Patriots season just because they did it without Gronk. They did it without Sony Michel. You have Cordarrelle Patterson in the backfield. You have the defense really holding up their end of the bargain. And it just felt like kind of one of those old school Patriots types of games that makes you think that, okay, they can go on a run this year.
Wes?
This was embarrassing for the Packers. How do you lose to that team? They're running Philip Dorsett and Dwayne Allen out there. Your wide receiver's a running back. No Gronk, no Sony Michel. This is just embarrassing for the Packers. They had so much better personnel on the field in this game, and they got outcoached.
I thought the Aaron Jones fumble reminded me of the Adam Thielen fumble from the Saints-Vikings game a week ago where nothing was the same after. Because right after that, the Patriots, who had been they were hedged in on offense. Suddenly they get into trick play territory. Edelman throws the ball to James White, who sets up the next touchdown. The Packers come out on the next drive, go a quick three and out with an awful sack on Rodgers that included a helmet-to-helmet hit, and then bang, game over. Patriots score to Josh Gordon next drive.
Packers just lost to a team whose best player is a scat back. Give me a break.
I mean, first of all, their best player is Tom Brady.
Tom Brady is not playing that well.
He's not playing as well as his MVP level. He is playing plenty well.
The Packers had a huge edge at quarterback in this game.
Rodgers made more plays, but ultimately it was held. Rodgers was held to 6 yards per attempt.
Ooh.
Look at that.
The first lock-off of the season. If you're wondering why there's a little heat between the scientists right now, Greg locks up the Patriots, gets the dub. Wes counted on the Packers, and they did. They came up small, Wes, for you. They really did.
They came up small. The refs had a hand in this.
Yes! Are you saying Operation Pink Pony is in play here?
That running into the kicker call, give me a break.
Didn't make a difference.
Adrian Claiborne's helmet-to-helmet hit on Rodgers, give me a break.
Hey, how about score some points when you get the ball?
No doubt, the Packers should be embarrassed that they only scored 17 points.
Ooh, I mean, also, you know, Chris should be a little embarrassed at least for making a speech like it was, you know, Gettysburg Address or something when the Packers had stopped the Patriots on the goal line.
Why should
stand.
I be embarrassed about that?
You said that was going to change their season.
This isn't a debate. It's a call to arms, Greg. America needs the Packers to win.
If you're not aware of what Wes said, this is what he said.
You're feeling right now rooting against the Patriots in primetime.
It's fun. I probably should have started this years ago. We all know that Belichick lost it. He's past his prime ever since the Malcolm Butler benching. And now you just see him go for it on fourth down and get denied. This is the thing that games are built on, that seasons are built on. Packers have momentum. America needs Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs, and we're going to get him with a win in this game. They're going to build on that, and life will be ascendant for the Green Bay Packers.
It went all wrong, Wes.
That was from Periscope.
That was – I mean, I was in character, Greg.
Well, you also did that off camera right before that happened. This the same.
I've been in character this whole game, and the Packers let me down.
They really did. They killed you here. And you're right. With Gronk not playing, Brady not sharp. At one point, he had incompletions on six straight passes, 7 out of 8. And we talked about this leading into this game, that this has not been a pristine Tom Brady year. But at the end of the day, Mark, here we are, 7-2. The Patriots obviously have the AFC East on lockdown. Their closest competitor is the Dolphins. And they are right in the mix again to get the bye and a big win over an NFC team here.
They're more than in the mix. They're just going to do it.
We're
going to do it.
We'll see.
I mean, we will see. We will sit here for the next 7 or 8 or 9 weeks while we see.
How come I'm the one that's in, like, not a bad mood? I should be
I'm not
furious.
In a bad mood, but I, like, my one thing is when it comes to Green Bay's offense, get it done for once. I'm tired of hearing about the potential. This was a tough stretch, the Rams and the Patriots.
Yep.
No shame in losing to both of these teams, but you are 3-4-1, and you are in a hole right now, and there are 3 or 4 teams that are clearly better than you in the NFC.
Well, you're right.
Before we ticket them for glory.
They should have won both those games, and they got sloppy.
And I think they're far from out of it at 3-4-1, and you're right. But if you're a Packers fan, you do want those games where, hey, your coaching staff breaks out the trick plays at 17.
It would be nice.
You know what I mean? Your coaching staff comes up with a guy like Cordarrelle Patterson running huge plays for that team. The Patriots ran those two. They were both kind of trick plays, but especially the first one to James White, because they needed it. Like, they have an uncanny, especially Josh McDaniels has an uncanny ability for breaking out those plays when nothing is going right, and they usually work, and it worked tonight.
And I'll just say this, and Mark, we talked about this off mic while the game was going on. Sometimes it might feel like excuses get made on behalf of Aaron Rodgers when you look at how the Packers really have not gotten the job done in the last 8 years or so since their Super Bowl appearance. But it does get frustrating game after game, year after year, and we'll use the last 2 weeks as an example here. Last week, it was Ty Montgomery's silly decision to run the ball out of the end zone, led to a fumble, cost Aaron Rodgers a chance to play hero ball. This week, it's Aaron Jones just not fundamentally sound, not covering up the ball. It leads to the turnover, puts him down, and you just want to see Rodgers surrounded by guys that sack up and get the job done. And it just, more often than not, I find that Rodgers is fighting an uphill battle against these upper echelon team because the rest of the team doesn't come to play.
And to your point, they've given up 31, 30, 29, and 31 points on defense over the last 4 weeks. I would say this, though. It's like it's a study in one organization that no matter who they have to put out there does not make these key mistakes. And they find a way to get into good situations in the fourth quarter, and you can't ask Aaron Rodgers to bail you out week after week.
Right, and I misspoke earlier. The Packers did score in the second half. They had a touchdown in the second half. But Rodgers, he has a high bar that he needs to play to, and you have to take advantage. This is not a great Patriots defense. You get the ball late in the first half. You kind of expect Rodgers to go down and score points there. He doesn't do it. They make that goal line stand, and you're thinking, okay, here we go, Packers offense. Like, let's get something going. They go 3 and out and kick the ball right back. So there's different moments
in the game.
How about
the end of the game? Where he's allowed to have some touchdown drives at the end of the game, and he came up small there.
Right. And he made, if you just made the best 5 throws of the game, he probably made them. So that's why it's frustrating to watch when he can do so many spectacular things, but the cohesiveness that Brady and McDaniels have.
No one is ever doubting the technical artistry and all this stuff that separates Aaron Rodgers, but part of it is just, it's not just the quarterback, it's the whole team, and the Packers are a disappointing team in the Mike McCarthy era for how little they've achieved with how much potential they've had.
And my last thought is, it is hyper, as a Jets fan, as someone that's done with the Patriots, it's hyper annoying that Josh Gordon is a star for the Patriots.
You're not the only one annoyed. I think it's, I mean, let's get over it. We have to get over it at this point, but it's like, again, it feels untoward that the
worse,
Patriots wound up with
him. It's even worse for you, Mark, because it's the Browns, but this was a, we talk about fatal flaw type things. They needed a playmaker in the worst way, and one fell into their lap for a fifth-round pick. This guy is taking their offense to another level.
He was the most... You were talking about the most valuable player. To me, his presence there tonight, they could not have lived without. Without Gronk, without much of a running game, they need Gordon to start making those one-on-one plays, and he is now. I mean, you're right. But the rest of the league could have given up a fourth-round pick for him. So it's not all just falling into your lap. It's having Brady, Belichick, and McDaniels having a place where he can go and thrive, and it's making that trade.
It's the competitive advantage of being Bill Belichick with the last 20 years give him so much leeway to make these kinds of moves because he's playing with house money.
All right, there you go. So 31-17, Patriots beat the Packers. That is our Week 9 recap. One more game to play on Monday. That will be the Cowboys and Titans from Jero World. We'll have that recap on our Tuesday Twitter show, which you could check out at 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 9:30 in the UK. And the next audio show will be on Wednesday. So make sure you check all that out. Thank you to everyone for listening. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the Mailman, the Old Boss, and the Loose Cannon, Ricky Hollywood behind the glass. Till Tuesday!